Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, February 8, 2018. 15 people were killed in inter-clan fighting in South Sudan.
The casualties, as we speak, we have a loss of 15 people and 8 people wounded.
And health officials declare South Sudan a cholera-free country.
Cholera is a disease that comes as a result of drinking contaminated water and poor sanitation. And these are issues that we have put down, and we are going to work with other partners to ensure that we are able to overcome.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Eyewitnesses and an official in Jonglei State says at least 15 people were killed and scores injured during an intercommunal fighting in Bor South County. The state government says it has dispatched soldiers to the area to stop the clashes. For VOA News, Deng Gai Deng reports from Bor.
Eyewitness Agwenge Nyal says last night fighting started near the banks of the River Nile and quickly spread to the nearby villages. Speaking by phone from Kolnyang, Nyal says it began when cattle keepers were looking after their cattle on the far side of the river at Mbajak.
After the sun set, they just shoot the goat on the other side of the river. When the owners of the goat went and looked at what happened, they just shoot randomly. And that is the beginning of the fighting.
Nyal says he saw at least 15 bodies and several wounded people. Jonglei State Information Minister Akenye Dengdit confirms the intercommunal fighting broke out last night in Bor.
The casualties, as we speak, we have a loss of 15 people and 8 people wounded.
Nyal says village homes were burned to the ground, forcing many villagers to flee to a nearby forest.
There's a lot of the houses which is on fire now. The situation can just fit me because I have no way out.
Ayuen Panchol, another eyewitness, says she and other neighbors remain hiding in the bush today. Speaking in Dinka by cell phone, Panchol says her father was among those killed last night.
There is a lot of destruction that has taken place here. I have heard that 6 people have been killed this side where I am. Among these 6, one is my father. We do not know what is going to happen next.
Panchol says last night fighting was a revenge attack following a clash over land in December that left 22 people killed and 18 others injured. The two clans have disputed ownership of a certain piece of land on their shared border. One of the clans claiming ownership says the land should be called Anuet, while the other clan says it should be called Fanwell. In December, state authorities arrested about 30 chiefs, youth leaders from both clans after the deadly fighting. Dengdi says state authorities have dispatched soldiers and police to the area to stop the fighting.
We cannot allow the civilian finish themselves. And that's why the organized forces have been taken there by the government of the state. All the ring leaders or youth leaders, community leaders, chief intellectual who have been involved before are being arrested. Also, the ring leaders is still on. People are being looked here in Bo or in the state and also in Juba.
Nyal is calling on the national government to intervene by sending in troops to disarm all armed groups in the area. Dengdi says there is no need for that because state authorities already plan to disarm civilians in the area. He says the exercise has not been carried out because it has yet to be approved by the national government in Juba. The first Vice President, Taban Dengai, visited Jonglei State last month following a tour of 5 states carved out of Jonglei. Guy told governors, county commissioners, Payam chiefs and other local leaders that unless they prevent their people from carrying out cattle raids and child abductions, the national government will hold them accountable for such actions. For VOA News, I am Deng Gai Deng, reporting from Bor.
health officials in South Sudan say the country is cholera-free. The announcement comes after the country experienced several outbreaks that lasted for 18 months and affected some 20,000 people. Nabil Biagio has more for VOA from Juba.
World Health Organization and health minister officials called a news conference in Juba yesterday to announce the end of the cholera outbreak, which has plagued the country since mid-2016. South Sudan Health Minister Riak Guy Kok says the outbreak began in Juba.
The first case was reported in El Sabah Children's Hospital on the 18th of June 2016, and it spread to over 26 counties across the country, and it continued also for a complete year until the 18th of December last year.
Cox says, for the last 7 weeks, not a single case of cholera has been reported in South Sudan. But he says that does not mean people should become complacent.
We should draw some lessons that might have been the root causes of the previous outbreak.
The minister says ending the cholera outbreak came about as a result of an effective response by the World Health Organization, UNICEF, the United States Agency for International Development, the Global Alliance for Vaccines and Immunization, and other agencies who work together to prevent further spread of the disease. Evans Majani Liosi, WHO's country representative in South Sudan, says this latest outbreak was the worst the country had seen, causing more than 400 deaths.
This has been one of the longest and the largest outbreak that started in 2016 at the peak of the conflict. But with the strong leadership and guidance by the Ministry of Health, we've been able to interrupt the current transmission.
Liosi says the outbreak dragged on for nearly 18 months because of the fighting that flared up in July 2016, catching health workers off guard.
At that time, fighting was going on and everybody was hiding. This was in July of 2016. So it was very difficult for the patient to go to the health facility or for the health worker to be in the health facility. People were moving to any direction, and those who were infected continued to move with this disease.
Liosi says at the time, many health workers working with non-governmental organizations were evacuated from conflict areas, which only exacerbated the cholera outbreak. Liosi says WHO is working with the Minister of Health to enact measures that sustain the gains they have achieved and prevent further outbreaks of cholera.
Cholera is a disease that comes as a result of drinking contaminated water and poor sanitation. And these are issues that we have put down, and we are going to work with other partners to ensure that we are able to overcome. I think moving forward, WHO will continue to provide technical support to the Minister of Health and other partners, and we will also continue to deploy rapid teams to areas that we suspect could be causing a problem.
WHO and health minister officials advise the public to use only clean, safe drinking water and to use water that's been treated with chlorine or has been boiled for washing dishes, and to always wash both hands with soap and water after using the latrine and before handling and eating food. Health officials also advise the public against defecating near or in any source of water. They also urge people to cook their food well and wash fruits and vegetables thoroughly. Despite announcing an end to the outbreak, Health Minister Kok advises citizens to report all suspected cholera cases to the National Outbreak Hotline 1144. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Juba.
Still on health matters, the Director General of the World Health Organization says he is establishing what he calls a health reserve army to tackle emerging diseases and outbreaks. Lisa Schrein reports for VOA from WHO headquarters in Geneva.
Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus says he has been spending the past 7 months working on a strategic plan to reform and improve the World Health Organization. The WHO chief says a major focus of this plan is on implementing swifter, more effective emergency response measures. Tedros notes this year marks the 100th anniversary of the Spanish flu, which killed up to 100 million people, far more than were killed during World War I. He says the world remains extremely vulnerable to potential pandemics and newly emerging diseases, and it must be prepared to respond to them quickly. He tells VOA it is crucial to work with countries on prevention in tackling these looming threats.
If anything happens, no country can do it alone. So we need to have a health reserve force, or if you like, health reserve army, in different locations, so countries who are better off can help other countries.
What he envisions, Tedros says, is the commitment of 50 countries that will have thousands of trained health workers on hand, ready to respond rapidly to medical emergencies wherever they occur. Tedros says he expects countries to cover their own expenses and help those that are unable to do so. Tedros, a former Ethiopian health minister and the first African to head the WHO, took office on July 1st. Back in October, he appointed then-Zimbabwean President Robert Mugabe as a WHO goodwill ambassador. This move sparked an international outcry and nearly derailed Tedros's nascent administration. Mugabe had faced U.S. sanctions over his government's human rights abuses. The appointment was quickly rescinded. The WHO chief says the appointment was made in good faith, but he acknowledges the impact it had on the organization and voices regret. Tedros adds it is time to put the controversy behind him, however, and get on with the urgent health issues at hand. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, the Bank of South Sudan makes a move to offset inflation in the country. That story is coming up next.
For in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. We are also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on VOA Africa.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what is the best way to save money?
By putting it in things that can produce more money. For example, if you're in construction like me, if I have a project you are working on, you can put in the money and then it gives you profit other than putting it in the bank. It takes a lot of time to get that profit.
The best way of saving money is like putting money into the bank because there's high security that is in the bank.
Obviously, banking, it's safer there.
As a woman, sometimes I can also buy gold jewelry or earrings. In this case, I'm also saving my money. So in case anything happened to me and I'm in need of money, I will automatically go back to the market and sell my gold then.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. The Central Bank of South Sudan says it wants to regulate and control devaluation of the South Sudan pounds across the country. But one economist says the measures will not repair the collapsed economy. For VOA News, Waki Simon Wood reports from Juba.
Dier Tongor, the first deputy governor of the Bank of South Sudan, says the decision to inject more U.S. dollars into the economy follows a meeting between the finance ministry, central bank officials, and President Salva Kiir. Ngor says the most recent drop in value of the South Sudanese pound against the U.S. dollar has led to a sharp increase in prices of basic goods and services this past week.
We will provide more dollars into the market. We will also want to support the key priority sectors, including the companies that are bringing fuel to the country, and also the companies that are bringing essential commodities to the countries.
The rate of exchange for the U.S. dollar jumped to 250 South Sudanese pounds this week on the black market. Last week, it exchanged for 215 South Sudanese pounds on the black market. Ngor says to ensure the pound does not drop in value again against the dollar, the Bank of South Sudan will regulate its supplies into the market. He says one of the reasons the exchange rate shot up again is because civil servants were paid in December.
We have also talked to banks to make sure that certain policies that we have issued before are upheld and are respected. In particular, we have issued banks with a circular that regulate the large cash transactions. When people come with large cash, banks need to make sure that the sources of these funds are legitimate sources.
Ngor admits the government has reduced hard currency due to its limited resources in the marketplace and the low price of oil.
At the moment, we are depending on one commodity. We are depending on oil. And as we all know, production of the oil has reduced. The international oil prices have also significantly been very low in the last few months. But thank God now, these prices is improving. So as long as there is improving in the oil prices, we will have more dollars because, as I have mentioned, the dollars that we get, because a dollar is not our currency, and therefore we get dollar when we produce more. So it depends on production.
Ngor says the central bank has warned commercial banks across the country not to finance foreign exchange trading. But Ahmed Morjan, an economics lecturer at the University of Juba, says foreign finance exchange trading is a key part of banking business that financial institutions cannot do without. Morjan says neither injecting more dollars into the economy nor regulating supplies will end the country's current economic crisis.
The measures which is being put by the central bank at the moment is a right measure, but at the wrong time at the moment. No, the economy has reached a situation where most of these measures will not be effective. As we know, the exchange rate crisis started because of deficiency of foreign exchange in the country. You see, due to the problems that you already know, low production of oil, the price reduction in the national market of oil, and again, the war situation in the country.
Morjan says South Sudan imports almost everything and it needs a lot of hard currency to import goods and services. He says the current price hike is a result of high demand for hard currency against the supply, which is very limited. For VOA News, I'm Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
Protesters today demanded more diversity in President Uhuru Kenyatta's cabinet as required by Kenya's constitution. Opposition leader Raila Odinga doubled down on his claims yesterday, telling the British Broadcasting Corporation he wants fresh elections this August. Rahel Obur and Amos Wanga reports from Nairobi.
The protesters carried signs that read, "Recall the list," as they marched to Parliament in Nairobi. They are demanding that the recently re-elected President Uhuru Kenyatta revise his list of cabinet nominees to make it more inclusive. 6 of the 21 nominees on the current list are women. No youth, defined as people between ages 18 and 35, were nominated. Activists say only one person with a disability has been nominated. Sabeti Mboga, a disabled mother of three, joined the march. I am here to protest because the government does not recognize us. We also want to be involved in the process of governance like anybody else. The protesters say Kenyatta is seeking to reward ruling party loyalists. Masi Jelimo is a leadership and governance officer at the Center for Rights Education and Awareness.
Today we are going to Parliament. This is our form of presentation of our memorandum to the Committee on Appointments. As they vet the cabinet nominees, we are there to express our dissatisfaction with the list.
In early January, Kenyatta came under fire from gender activists for announcing a partial list of nominees that included no women. he released a full list on January 26th. The president has not responded to criticism of his cabinet picks. The issue is re-emerging amid a tense political climate. Kenyatta's government is drawing criticism for its arrest of three people who took part in the mock presidential inauguration of opposition leader Raila Odinga on January 30th and for its temporary shutdown of three TV stations that tried to cover the event. The Interior Minister said the government acted to prevent violence. Rights groups say authorities are trampling on the constitution and defying court orders. Jimmy Eddy, a member of Team Courage, a local activist group, marched Thursday with other demonstrators.
We have seen the media being under siege of lately. We have also seen arrest of various people, including deportation. How do you deport your child from your house?
Odinga rejected the results of the October presidential runoff election, which he boycotted, and has called for a fresh vote in August. One of the three opposition figures arrested over the swearing-in ceremony arrived in Canada Thursday after being deported, according to local media. Miguna Miguna is a leader of Odinga's National Resistance Movement. In a statement, the Interior Ministry said Miguna's Kenyan citizenship has been revoked. Rael Ombor for VOA News, Nairobi.
Still on politics, we move to Zimbabwe, where factional cracks are growing in Zimbabwe's main opposition party, the Movement for Democratic Change. Members are arguing over who is the acting president, while party leader Morgan Tsvangirai undergoes cancer treatment in South Africa. Reporter Kuzeye Zenivashi has this report from Harare.
It's been over a month since Morgan Tsvangirai left for medical treatment in South Africa. This is the longest he has gone for medical care. Thursday, Tsvangirai spokesperson Luke Tamborinyoka tried to tamp down rising concerns.
Well, is Mr. Tsvangirai likely to be back? We expect him soon. That is all I can say at the moment. He's unwell, but we expect him home soon.
Tsvangirai founded the party in opposition to Robert Mugabe, who led the nation for 37 years. The military forced Mugabe out late last year, but his ZANU-PF party continues to run the government under President Emmerson Mnangagwa. Wednesday, Tamborinyoka said Tsvangirai wanted Vice President Nelson Chamisa to serve as MDC acting president until he returns. Chamisa takes over from another vice president, Elias Mudzuri, who has been acting president since Tsvangirai left early last month. Tamborinyoka says there is no need for debate over the announcement.
There has been needless furor over my statement communicating President Tsvangirai's position. That Vice President Honorable Nelson Chamisa is now the acting president.
However, the stage has been set for a battle within the party after the MDC national spokesperson, Obet Gutu, contradicted Tamborinyoka.
Let me speak to you as the official spokesperson of the MDCT. I am authoritatively instructed and advised to advise the world that the acting president of the MDCT remains Honorable Elias Mudzuri.
Gutu says Mudzuri himself will set the record straight on Friday when he is back in the country. However, Tamborinyoka says the appointment of acting presidents had been arranged earlier.
It must be noted that in September of 2017, President Tsvangirai left an MDC Alliance workshop in Kadoma and went for treatment in South Africa. He left VP Kupe as acting president and we communicated the same. On the 5th of January 2018, the president appointed Vice President Honorable Engineer Elias Mudzuri as acting president. And again, I communicated the same to everyone and there was no halabaloo. On the 7th of February 2018, he appointed Honorable Chamisa as acting president. There's been a pattern about these appointments. Because as of now, all the three of his deputies have acted in his absence.
Some Zimbabwe political analysts note that the country's politics have been characterized by factionalism driven by self-interest. As a result, they say the MDC will not be able to win national elections later this year unless they resolve their dispute soon. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinawashe from Harare.
Still in southern Africa, a dry spell in parts of southern Malawi has rekindled accusations of witchcraft and mob violence. Authorities have been quick to condemn the attacks and dispel the accusation as hoax. Lamek Masina reports for VOA from Flamie District.
January 29, 2018 is a day that will be hard for Ida Wison to forget. She is the resident of Tambula Village in Malawi's southern Palombe District. She says we were about to take our supper when we saw a mob of armed young men approaching my house. She says she feared for her life and immediately ran into the bush. From there, she says she saw the mob set fire to several houses. Wison is among 8 villagers targeted that day over accusations that they were withholding rains through magic. Police say there have been similar rumors circulating in other parts of the district, but no other violence. The villagers say the area has been without rain since December. Crops have wilted, raising fears of hunger. A mob ransacked the home of a 76-year-old traditional leader, Jameson Maiden. He says, I am surprised with the accusations because my maize garden has wilted because of the drought. He says, how could I withhold the rains and leave myself with nothing to eat? The latest figures from the Ministry of Agriculture show that more than 700,000 farmers are expected to lose 40% of their harvest this year because of low rainfall. Farmers are advised to plant early maturing varieties should the rains come. Police say they have arrested 6 people in connection with the attacks as the hunt continues for others who fled to neighboring Mozambique. Spokesperson for Palombe Police Station, Innocent Moses, told VOA their preliminary investigations reveal the violence is related to unresolved chieftaincy wrangles. He says members of the community are taking advantage of the drought and local superstitions. Palombe is the same district that saw 7 people killed by angry mobs last year over rumors of alleged vampires attacking residents. The village of Ntambula bears the same name as its group headman. He spoke to VOA. He says there were no bloodsuckers then, and there is no one who is withholding rains now. He says these are just tricks used to steal other people's property. Meanwhile, the director of Meteorological Department in Malawi, Jola Mkokwe, explains the reason for the drought.
Because the high pressure system has been sitting over the region, southern Africa, including southern part of Malawi. And that has been preventing any development of clouds.
He told VOA that the high pressure system has begun to dissipate, and as a result, some affected areas have already started receiving rains. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Palombe, Malawi.
That story by Masina brings us to the end of our show for this Thursday. We now leave you with the song Anader Salam by I Am Peace Ambassadors.
We're singing for peace.
It doesn't matter which color.
I am peace. You are peace. We are peace.
All we need is 4 hands.
There's no sense of living without a neighbor when we deserve them. There's no sense of hating one another based on our tribes. They're attacking the office of the waiter. Matasa kila mo sada mabasa nge mila daki.
Madrupidini adosinjo withenye nundisa madrupinye betawa and recall yoko bore kolu maiwa. Let's learn to forgive and live in peace and harmony. Doesn't matter where you came from, what tribe or race, politicians politicking trying to cause separation. And just sick and tired of this wars that you're creating. Innocent lives lost every day and night. Children left helpless. What kind of life are we leading? Yeah, let's preach peace.
Alleluia.
We've been listening to Peace Ambassadors with their song Anader Salam. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. We want to know what you think about this show. You can contact us on South Sudan at voanews.com. You can also find us on Facebook. Our Facebook name is South Sudan in Focus. Join us again next week, rather tomorrow, for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.